The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, December 2nd, 2019.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She does everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me on the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Wow, we've gotten some wonderful, wonderful rain here in Sonoma County and in Northern California. It certainly is welcomed, especially after all these horrible fires. I mean, it's just amazing. The air feels so very crisp this morning. I'm very excited. Joining me on the phone this morning will be Dr. Harriet Fraud. Dr. Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She is a well-published author and writes about the pressures of families and the economics of the USA. Her articles have appeared in numerous publications, and we will be talking about something that a topic I've been wanting to cover for a while. We will be talking about the definition of capitalism, socialism, communism, and we're going to add in feudalism. You know, you hear these ideas being spread across the news, and I myself am not clear on the differences and know that Dr. Fraud can set us straight, and at least in the definitions, and I know she'll have some really good opinions. Dr. Fraud is also a regular guest of Dr. Richard Wolff and his show Economic Update, which is on KBBF 89, which is on KBBF every Tuesday from 11 to 12 p.m. Also joining me on the phone will be Megan Kahn, who is a member of the Board of Directors for Conservation Action here in Sonoma County, and they have an event coming up in the next few days, Great and Against Synthetic Pesticides, and we are going to be talking about that. I'm really, really excited about that. And, you know, I'm also excited that on December 8th, we're going to be doing the kickoff for the 2020 celebration, where we're celebrating 100 years since we achieved the 19th Amendment, which gave all women across the United States the right to vote. Our history, I want to remind you, our history is our strength, and I always like to bring some new dates and new ideas so people can think of all the things that women have done in the past century. On December 1st, 1955, Rosa Parks refuses to give up her seat on a bus to a white person. Her arrest sparks the modern civil rights movement in the United States. Amazing. That was December 1st. Today's December 8th. So let's see, 1955, 65, 75, 85, 95, 20. Oh, my God, it's over 50 years ago that happened. Well, shout out to dear Rosa Parks for doing that. And then on December 5th, 1935, Mary McLeod Bethune creates the National Council of Negro Women. Very, very important that women coming together talking about some of the inequities that they experience. So a shout out to Mary McLeod Bethune, B-E-T-H-U-N-E. Really, when you start thinking of some of the things that women have done, it's just amazing. And then on December 7th, 1941, Captain Annie Fox received the first Purple Heart awarded to a woman for her service while under attack at Pearl Harbor. It's amazing. Our history is our strength. When we find out what is going on, it's just amazing how that happens. Well, I have a few announcements to make. The first announcement I have to make is on Wednesday, December 4th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Peace and Justice Center at 467 Sebastopol Avenue in Santa Rosa. They're going to have an open conversation around the fire. You know, and you all are invited to this facilitated discussion to share your recent experiences. So that's going to be this Wednesday, December 4th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Peace and Justice Center. And then we have on December 4th, and that's what we're going to be talking about with Megan Kahn, Greatin Against Synthetic Pesticides. Learn about the health risks, symptoms, how to detox safely, and your rights. That's going to be Wednesday, December 4th from 4 to 6 p.m. December 4th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Greatin Community Club. And we will be talking about that extensively when I have Megan on the phone. In fact, I think she's queued in already. And then, very important, remember last week we had the young people from Sunrise Movement, amazing, amazing show. And, you know, all shows are archived on www.womenspaces.com. So if you miss a show, you can always go online and listen to it at your leisure. It's on December 6th. And by the way, that's also my sister Evelyn's birthday. On Friday, December 6th, there's going to be a global youth climate strike. And it starts at 12 o'clock. There's going to be a die-in in all the high schools. And I think it's amazing the way these young people organize this. So the rallies are going to be a little bit later, but that they got agreements from all the high schools to do this die-in. And that's going to be happening at 12 o'clock. And then there's going to be a march at 5 o'clock. You meet at Juilliard Park in downtown Santa Rosa. And then at 5:30, there's going to be a march. It's going to be like a candlelight vigil. And then from 6 to 7 in Courthouse Square, they're going to have lots and lots of speakers. So there's no reason why people cannot get involved. And as far as the youth go, you know, I say this several times. I remember when we were protesting the Vietnam War and also trying to bring forward the idea around pesticides with Rachel, when Rachel Carson came out with Silent Spring. And you know something? Very little support from the adults. We need to support our youth. It's their future they're fighting for. And what all they're trying to say is the adults in the room need to do something. You know, I think they should lower the vote to 16. If we're not going to do anything for these kids, these young people, then they have the right to have the vote. And then maybe then we'll push them. Anyway, lots to think about, lots of places to go to. And I know everybody had a wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving. I want to wish you from the bottom of my heart a wonderful, wonderful holiday season. Now, look it. I am not against Christmas. When I say happy holiday season, there's something like 37 holidays going on in December. Every different religion, different ideas, different stories around Jesus, around the birth, around everything. So happy holidays to everybody, whatever your persuasion is. And also a reminder, and I got some really good news, because I don't know if you remember, I hope you remember, but last week when we had the Young Sunrise Group, and we also had a woman by the name of Connie Madden, who has Oasis Community Farm, and what she calls herself an adult supporter. I just love that. Well, Connie, I'm an adult supporter, and I want everybody to know that the Sonoma County Gazette is out on the streets right now, and there's a wonderful, wonderful article by Connie Madden about good jobs and livable future, all about climate change and the young people with Sunrise. Just an amazing, amazing group. Well, without further ado, I have a very dear friend on the phone with me, Megan Kahn. Megan, good morning. Thank you so much for coming on to Women's Spaces this morning. How are you doing?
Hi, Elaine. Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
How'd you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Yeah, we did. Just stayed home. Got a lot of sleep.
Well, I got to say something, Megan. You, this morning when I woke up and I went on Facebook, I saw a picture of you and your beautiful family. And it just warmed my heart knowing that there are women out there who are not only active in the community, but an activist for climate change and all the other things that are going on, but also an aware and conscious mother. So congratulations. Those are beautiful, beautiful family you have.
Thank you, Elaine. I appreciate it.
Well, in this segment, I have asked Megan Kahn to join us and talk about how folks can learn about the health risks created by pesticides in our environment and what rights we have as a community. So, Megan, you know, I know you have a master's degree from, you know, Ken's alma mater, Stanford, in science in environmental fluid mechanics and hydrology from Stanford. That's amazing. And also, you have a BS in environmental engineering from Northwestern University. And I can go on and on about you. And you also serve as board of directors for the Sonoma County Conservation Action and leads the Toxic Free Future campaign. So let's get into this. Talk about the Greatin Against Synthetic Pesticides happening this Wednesday, December 4th. How did you get involved involved, and why do you believe people need to be aware of the problem that's created by pesticide use and why they should show up at this event?
Yes, so I am leading a new coalition in Sonoma County that is called Sonoma Safe Ag, Safe Schools, or SASS. And our goal is to work toward getting a pesticide-free Sonoma County and pave the way for safer land management practices, especially around our schools and our communities. And you know, through the Toxic Free Future campaign, our work has already led to most of the public parks in Sonoma County being managed completely without toxic synthetic weed killers like Roundup, which I think is an awesome accomplishment. And we are now working with a dedicated group of individuals in Grayton, California, to start a conversation with the farms in their area about the agricultural chemicals that are being used near their homes, near their school. They're near Oak Grove Elementary School. Their group is really ready to work with the local farmers to have a good, positive discussion to try to figure out solutions to help their community. And so I'm really proud to be working with them. I would like to invite everybody, not just Grayton residents, to come out for their event. They call themselves Grayton Against Synthetic Pesticides, or GASP. And they are going to have an event that will feature all sorts of interesting people, like Brian Lila, who is the Children of the Vine director. This movie coming out soon will feature information on the health effects that children are having from living in wine country in Sonoma and Napa counties. So I'm really looking forward to hearing from him. Also at the event, there'll be local doctors, science experts, myself included, and policy experts to talk about what the community in Grayton and then other communities throughout Sonoma County can do to try to protect themselves and not have as much pesticide drift in their homes and schools.
Megan, just out of curiosity, you know, what is it? What is it in the pesticides that are creating some of the problems? And what are some of the problems that you feel or believe are being created? I mean, I know there's a lot of information, a lot of scientific data that supports what some of your opinions are. But what is it about these particular pesticides that is so harmful?
Right. Well, in Sonoma County, there are hundreds of different synthetic pesticides, so herbicides, fungicides, insecticides that are used on agriculture. Glyphosate, which is in Roundup, is definitely the most used, and over 35 tons of glyphosate is sprayed on Sonoma County ag lands every year. So we know glyphosate is not good for human health, not good for the environment. It's implicated in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and other really bad human health impacts. In addition, there's a lot of other really dangerous chemicals that are sprayed on our crops, and we don't really have a good idea of when that's going to happen for people that live near vineyards or other farms. You know, when should they close their windows at night? It's not really sure. Another class of chemicals that I'm concerned about in local ag are the bee-killing neonicotinoids, and a lot of those are also used on 10,000 acres of our local ag is sprayed with those chemicals, and they're implicated not only in, you know, insect Armageddon, the death of all of our insects, including butterflies and bees, but also a lot of bad human health effects. So we really are trying to have a positive conversation with our local ag. We love our farmers. We love that we live in rural communities. But more could be done to protect the people that live near farms.
Well, you know, it's so interesting when you start thinking about what's going on and how difficult it is sometimes to remove some of these chemicals from the environment. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And that's why it's important, I believe, that people show up and have a voice. You know, our children are the future. You know, and what kind of future are we giving them if they have to breathe this kind of stuff in? And it's so subtle. You know, I remember I was reading something, how subtle it is, how these toxins get into our system. So we really have to be careful. And I wanted to say thank you for all the work you do and all the work that your organization does. And just, you know, to bring the awareness to people is so, so important. So let's talk a little bit about this event. So it's happening Wednesday, December 4th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Grayton Community Club. You know, I didn't even know the Grayton Community had a community club. That's great. And there's going to be several people on the panel, I imagine. So talk a little bit about that. What is going to be there, and why do you think it's important for people to show up?
Well, it's important to show up just to understand what's happening in our rural communities. And we're really focused on bringing science to this discussion. So we will have doctors that will talk about biomonitoring. We're interested in getting a group of people together that may be interested in participating in a biomonitoring study and also in a detox group class that this doctor will talk about. Because just, you know, living in our world today, even if you don't live next to a farm, it's a toxic place, and there's a lot of stuff that we get exposed to and we have to know how to protect ourselves. In addition, I will be talking about some other science studies that we're interested in bringing to Grayton. We want to do air quality testing to try to see if pesticide drift might be impacting local residents. We're also interested in doing a groundwater study because many of the Grayton residents are on private or small community wells, and so it's possible that their well water is being affected. In addition, we'll have some local policy experts talking about different strategies that we might use to have, again, a positive conversation with the agricultural neighbors in Grayton to see if we can't work out some ways of working with the farms to create solutions that will help everybody.
Well, you know, when you start thinking about it, you know, even though we have a troubled world right now where there's so many challenges, the upside of that is exactly what you said, coming together, coming the farmers and the people, trying to work things out. I mean, that's the true essence. You know, when Dr. Fraud is going to come on afterwards. We're going to be talking about, we're going to be doing some definitions around socialism, communism, capitalism, and feudalism. And what's so interesting that all persuasions need people and people active. So it's very, very important that people show up. You know, Megan, I'm sorry, but, you know, I made a mistake here. Do you have the address for the Grayton Community Club?
Yes, I do. It is at 8996 Grayton Road in Grayton. It's at Main Street and Edison, and it's pretty easy to find. I was there last week for their community potluck, and it's a really nice venue and really great people in the community of Grayton, so should be a good event. And if you have more questions or want more information on the GASP, Grayton Against Synthetic Pesticides, people, they have a website. It's www.graytongasps.com, so GRATONGASPS.com. And there's information about the event. You can sign up. It's free. It's a free event, but we're asking if people can to RSVP. There's also a petition that people can sign.
Well, Megan Kahn, I want to thank you so much for providing this wonderful information for us and for coming on Women's Spaces and for all you do. So any last words before we say so long?
No, that's it. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Elaine. I hope to see a lot of people on Wednesday and look forward to talking with you in the future on other events that we'll hold.
Thank you so much, Megan.
Thanks, Elaine. Take care.
Oh, I'm telling you. This is what makes the world worthwhile, community and the people that are involved in the community. I mean, a special shout out to Megan and all the young women and young men in our community that are working so hard to get the road clean, so to speak. Well, anyway, we are going to take a musical break. And the song I'm going to be playing is called Singing for Our Lives, and it's sung by Holly Near. And why did I pick the song? Listen to the lyrics. We're protesting for our lives, and protesting is a kind of a form to me is like a song, a gathering of people coming together saying enough is enough. I mean, I think we should write a song and just all of us just start shouting enough is enough is enough is enough. I've had it up to my head. If I hear one more negative thing in this world, I'm going to scream. And that's why it's so important for events like the Grayton Against Synthetic Pesticides, why it's important to have the conversations around the fire, why it's important to show up on December 6th to support your youth. I mean, come on, guys. And always remember that all the information that we are giving you is all listed on www.womenspaces.com. It's all listed there. And I'm very excited to announce talking about Women's Spaces. I'm excited because the last show of the year is going to be on December 30th, and I'm really proud to announce that Ken is going to do another show with me at the end of the year, and I'm really excited to have him on. And also, we're going to play one of the clips from one of his shows that he does. So anyway, let's go ahead and listening to Singing for Our Lives, sung by Holly Near. And when we come back, I will be talking with Dr. Harriet Fraud, who is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. Dr. Fraud is also a regular guest on Richard Wolff's Economic Update, which plays on our station on Tuesdays from 11 to 12. And we are talking about the history of history and definitions of capitalism, socialism, and communism. When I listen to the song I am playing, Singing for Our Lives, I think of all the young people, all those young people from the Sunrise Movement all the way across the nation, to asking the adults in the room to make climate change a high priority so they can have a future. So here we go, Holly Near, Singing for Our Lives. Of gentle, loving people. We love our lives. We love our children. We love our planet Earth. Amazing song. Amazing song. For you folks just joining in, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my favorite guest joining me on the phone, and it's an honor to introduce her, Dr. Harriet Fraud. Welcome, Harriet. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
I'm so glad to be here, and this is a favorite place to be.
Well, before we begin, like I always do, I want to just tell my listeners just a little bit about you. Is that okay? Dr. Harriet Fraud is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in a private practice in New York City. She speaks regularly and writes about the intersecting crisis in the United States relationships, personal life, politics, and economics. She was a founding member of the second wave of the women's movement and has remained an activist for her entire life. She appears regularly on the radio show called Economic Update. She's also part of the Juliana Forlano, a morning show.
Juliana Forlano.
For Lana.
I wasn't with that morning show anymore.
Oh, okay.
However, I was.
Well, you're also on a regular on Women's Spaces, which I am so honored to have you on. Her latest written work appears in Knowledge Class in Economics, Marxism Without Guarantees, Routledge 2019. And today we'll be talking about the history, the definition of, and definitions of capitalism, socialism, and communism. Anything you'd like to add, Harriet?
Yes, I have a website, harrietfraud.com, and it's called Capitalism Hits Home. You can get it at my website, harrietfraad.com. or on YouTube, or on Democracy at Work.
Well, amazing, amazing, all the things you're involved in. And a reminder to my listeners that every time we mention any kind of website or any kind of program, you just go to www.womenspaces.com, and it's all listed. Well, for this show, Harriet, I invited you to help us find out the definitions of these several really hot topics, one, capitalism, socialism, and communism, and its impact on both the past, present, and future. Before we talk, I'd like to find out what motivated you to study these systems, and why do you think it's important for folks to understand them?
Well,
Harriet, you're going to have to speak a little louder, my love.
Okay. How about that?
A little bit closer to the phone.
Okay, how about that?
Perfect. Okay. So what motivated you? You were once a young person going to school and educating yourself. How did all of a sudden this hit you that this is what you had to study and this was what was important to you?
Well, it certainly wasn't anything presented to me in school from my early years all the way through graduate school. And yet the terms are bandied about, class, socialism, communism, capitalism. And so I thought, wow, I better make sure I know what I'm talking about when I talk about these things, because like all other Americans, I was never taught this in school. So that's what motivated me.
Well, it's really interesting. I'll tell you a quick story. This happened in 1957, you know, during the McCarthy era. I was in high school, and I raised my hand. Mr. Ritterhoff was my teacher, and I raised my hand. I said, Mr. Ritterhoff, I said, since communism is such a threat, why don't we study it and learn about it so I'll know if I meet a communist that I'll know that, you know, to run away from them or whatever my thought was at that time. They sent me down to the girls' vice principal office. They wanted to know why I was asking that question, and then all of a sudden they start telling me my father was a union man, and when did he join the union? I went, what is going on here? And I went home and told my folks, and they came to the school and answered a few questions. I really don't know what went on, and then it was over. But it was just that point of not willing to educate me, which was so frustrating.
It is, and it's, you know, we could say this is what these things are and then discuss them. But it's really the only country in the world that I know of where there's a total close down. All over Europe, people know these things.
Well, let's start the conversation out by just talking a little bit about communism. What is the definition of that? And then I want to go into socialism, and then after socialism, we'll go into capitalism. How does that sound to you?
That sounds great.
Okay, let's just give a little definition of We know communism from the Russian Revolution, and I'm still a little confused by that, because it seems like the Russian Revolution really was not did not turn out to be the revolution they wanted it to be. And so what is it? What is communism? What is the definition of it?
Well, the first thing we have to do is understand what class is, because those are different ways of organizing class. And class answers three basic questions. Who produces the wealth, the goods and services in a nation? Who gets to appropriate the profits from those goods and distribute them? So, and I must say that although the Russian Revolution started out with communist principles, when Russia was invaded by 10,000 American troops after their revolution, I should say that the Russian capitalists who were fighting a civil war in that war-torn, decimated, backward economy of Russia, appealed to the capitalists of the United States, France, and Britain, the most thriving capitalist countries, to help them out and reestablish capitalism. 10,000 American troops invaded Russia, as well as troops from France and Britain, fighting for the return of capitalism. They joined the White Army. Against them was the Red Army in Russia. And the Red Army had women battalions for the first time, but it was the army of the people who wanted the revolution. And it won, in spite of the fact that the country was poor, in the midst of a civil war, very backward, but the people were very enthusiastic about wanting a change.
So are you saying that at the beginning of the revolution, it was really trying to gain a capitalist system rather than what they were aspiring to?
It was trying to gain a communist system, and I better define what I'm talking about.
Okay.
In a real communist system, the people who produce the wealth, the workers who do the services and produce the goods, decide what to produce, how to produce it, and how to distribute it. And they had organized in the beginning these Soviets, these groups based on workplaces, that made the decisions that went up to representatives of a higher level what to do in this society, and what to produce, and how to produce it, and how to distribute it, and what to do with the profits of the society. But what happened was, and also women's position took a huge leap forward at first. They allowed women to divorce. They immediately legalized abortion. They made male and female wages equal. They fought against the Russian Orthodox Church that wanted women subservient. They had big women's conferences where women walked hundreds of miles on foot to hear about how they were equal and how they were important. It was a huge explosion of possibility. Then after the invasions, and we have to remember that people get scared with the invasion. I mean, look what happened to our civil rights when we weren't invaded, but after the World Trade Center was bombed, and the Patriot Act was passed and then renewed by the Democrats recently, civil rights took a beating. Well, they took a beating then, plus Lenin died, and Stalin took over, and he basically reversed all those gains for women. He said women have to be in charge of the family as well as work outside the home. He closed the hours of the child cares that were open at all hours to only those hours where women were working. He reinforced the traditional family. And the Russian Communist Revolution became a state capitalist revolution where the state takes in all the profits and bureaucrats of the state decide what gets produced, where it's produced, and what to do with the wealth produced by the people who became employees of the state.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that communism was basically a program that would give the workers more power and more decision making. And what happened was that it just all got convoluted and then eventually turned into a dictatorship. And then now here we are in 2019. It's turned into another revolution where it's now a capitalist country.
Which, exactly. And so now women are terribly sexually abused, and now they're the majority of the unemployed, and now sex abuse is not prosecuted, and now children are unprotected after divorces, and 60% are divorced. It's a disaster area for women now.
So what you're saying too is what I'm gleaming out of everything that I've been reading is that the people have an ideal, and then suddenly the other forces come in and take care. So communism is really a kind of a worker state, and where we're confused is that it was turned into a dictatorship, and then later on
Russia, it was.
Yeah, so it's really interesting when you look at that perspective. Well, let's look now at the most, I mean, I can't believe how many times I have heard the word socialism in the past 6 months. I mean, it feels, and it's almost like a trigger word. It's almost like when people hear socialism, it's like they hear a dirty word, if you know what I'm saying. So I thought it'd be very, very important to dispel the myth, and also to look at what is the difference between just straight socialism and then what, say, like someone like Bernie Sanders is talking about, which is socialism as social democracy, I believe, is what they're coining. So can you address that?
Sorry. What socialism is a highly regulated capitalism. It's sort of like what FDR did when capitalism broke down in the 30s. He went to the big wealthy people and he said, if you want to not have a class revolution here, you better give me what I want. And they were taxed at a rate of 96.8% of their income and wealth. Whereas now, people like Trump pay no taxes and brag about it, and people like Romney brags that he pays 13% of his taxes, because people who are wealthy now have their wealth in offshore accounts and hire fancy lawyers to protect their wealth. But at that time, that didn't happen, and FDR had a real socialist impulse to regulate the private capitalism that had failed. What socialism does is it comes into capitalism, regulates the capitalism, has maximum wages as well as minimum wages, highly taxes them, and enacts legislation to prevent them from creating grotesque inequality. That's what socialism is, and that's what Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie want to do here, like what we did in the New Deal.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. I was thinking, when I was reviewing for the show, I did some reviews around listening to Ronald Reagan and some of his speeches, you know, particularly talking about the welfare mother, you know, being able to get drugs and driving a Cadillac. And also the idea of, you know, that somehow the government is going to be taken over in a negative way. And right now, I mean, right here in our own community, we have the Alvarado Bakery. It's owned by employees. Okay. Now, to me, when I'm reading socialism, this is a model. It's a model. It's almost like socialism almost shakes the hand of capitalism. It allows capitalism to breathe in a way that doesn't suffocate the people.
Yes, it's regulated. Socialism regulates. Now, the Alvarado Bakery is really built on a communist model because the workers make the decisions about what to do with the money they create. And it's in a small way.
So that's the difference then between socialism and communism.
Communism is really the workers deciding. And the communist states that have existed were the Paris Commune, which lasted less than 3 months, but had a huge liberation of men with equal wages and everything, and then was crushed by the French royalty combined with their former enemies, who united around crushing them.
Well, you know,
only about 3 months later.
You know, I just want to go back to Reagan a little bit. Another thing that he said that I felt was very, very interesting as I listened to some of his speeches about the fact about no regulations, that it was regulations that were creating a lot of problems for us. And what you're saying is, in a socialist democracy, because we think we live in a democracy that you have certain rights as a worker,
right,
under this form. Like, for example, right now there's such resistance, even though there's a great, great movement, there's such a resistance to unions. And unions are really kind of a socialist model. They want to regulate employees as far as wages go, as far as benefit goes. Would I be correct in my understanding? Because the reason I'm bringing this in is because I really believe that people out there are, in their own mind, are as confused as I am sometimes. That's why I'm asking these questions. I hope you don't mind.
Well, Reagan, who represented the wealthiest people in the society, wanted to make them think that the problem is government rather than lousy government. And he wanted to undo the New Deal, which they've pretty successfully dismantled, and make the government the enemy rather than bad government the enemy. You know, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Iceland, Finland, they all have democratic socialisms because there's private ownership, but their societies are heavily regulated to ensure the well-being of the mass of people. They're socialist.
So, and it's such a trigger word. Why is it? Why do you think that people get so up in arms when they hear, oh, it's going to be a social, we're going to be a socialist country, and when these are the benefits for the people by having regulations, and it doesn't take away from your right to own property, your right to have your own business, your right to all the persuade. In fact, it feels like it gives you more freedom.
In some ways, it does, because you don't have the stranglehold of people like Jeff Bezos. However, you know, what they did is after World War II, when our biggest ally was Russia and Uncle Joe, which was Joe Stalin, and the Communist Party was very strong because it created a lot of power for unions and for the New Deal, they wanted to crush that. And the way they did it was to create anti-communism in this country and equate communism with the violent takeover of the United States and to get people to hate communists and their fellow travelers, socialists and their fellow travelers, trade unionists, because the great power that created the New Deal was the power of the CIO, the biggest union drive that had ever happened. The Communist Party and the Socialist Party, and they wanted to first destroy the communists, then the socialists as fellow travelers, and gut all those progressives out of the unions, and then destroy the unions, and they've pretty much done a good job.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. They have, at the station, they have a booklet. It's for employee rights. And as I read through it, I was reading through it, you know, the right to equal pay, the right to a 15-minute break, you know, the right to a half-hour lunch. I mean, things that you thought were just automatically given were actually part of a struggle. You know, my father was a union man. He joined the union when he was in his late 20s when he was back east and showed me a scar on his head. And he said that when they came to this country, they came from another country and they thought, oh my God, you know, everything is so beautiful here in the United States. And here they had to struggle so hard during the Depression to try to get the unions. And what Roosevelt did was really, that was a very interesting thing. He pulled the country out of a horrible situation and gave people a sense of dignity again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting. But why? And here we have this trigger word. You know, it's so important, you know, when you think about it. Folks, we have to think about things. We can't just react. I mean, are we that lazy mentally that when we hear a word, we can't say, maybe I'll go to my dictionary and see what the definition is, or maybe I'll look at what the difference is. I mean, I had no idea, to be honest with you, that all this happened in the Russian Revolution, how it went one way and went in. And people have to be aware of that also.
They absolutely do, and yet that's not part of our education system. I had these lousy civics classes every year. All we did was study this thing and bored out of our minds. We didn't learn anything like this.
Yeah, it's
weird. That was part of the anti-communism following World War II.
Can I, you know, as far as socialist goes and as far as what FDR did with the New Deal, Francis Perkins was very, very involved in that. Now, I understand that she was the first woman appointed to the Department of Labor. I can't imagine her working with these union guys like John Lewis and all that. I mean, just, she was an amazing woman.
Was.
Now, from what I understand, before she was part of the socialist movement, and she had to change to be a Democrat so he could appoint her.
Right.
So, I mean, that in itself is in. So Roosevelt had all these influences and all these like there's nobody out there that's going to dispute when you're older, like ourselves, getting Social Security or getting Medicare, right, or having a good school for our children or having, you know, a hospital that takes care of people. All these different things that go on. I mean, that's a model of for the people, which could be equated to adding the socialist perspective into our democracy, which we call capitalism.
That's right. And look, you name a system for the dominant relationship in the system, which is employer-employee. But it doesn't mean that there aren't other elements. And FDR got us out of the Depression through socialist measures.
Well, he
got those rich capitalists to pay taxes of 96.8% so that he could give the country, in the midst of a depression, unemployment insurance, Social Security, Medicare, all sorts of benefits. And the WPA program, the workers' movement, which gave people jobs. It gave 11 million jobs, which if our government did that, it would create 22 million socially useful, decently paid jobs.
So people have to get used to the idea. They have to think in terms of what Bernie Sanders says is social democracy, socialist.
That's right.
I mean, it's very interesting. So, Harriet, we're going to take a musical break now.
Good.
Now, the next topic we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about capitalism. And what I chose is the song I chose, sung by Judy Collins, is With God on Our Side. Now, why I choose the songs trying to integrate them with the topic. Why did I choose this song? Because our capitalist system right now is being governed by the idea that somehow God is doing these things. So I thought it'd be really good to play this song with God on our side.
Good idea.
And when I return, folks, I will continue my conversation with Dr. Harriet Fried, who is a mental health counselor and hypnotherapist in practice in New York City. She is also a regular guest of Dr. Richard Wolff's show, Economic Update. And we will continue talking about our definitions of capitalism, socialism, and communism. And now, when we return, we are going to talk about our culture, and that's the capitalist culture.
It means less. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught and brought up there the laws to abide, and the land that I live in has God on its side. Oh, the history books tell it, they tell it so well. The cavalry's charge, the Indians fell. The cavalry's charge, the Indians died. Oh, the country was young with God on its side. Oh, the Spanish-American War had its day, and the Civil War, too, was soon laid away. And the names of the heroes I was made to memorize, with guns in their hands and God on their side. Oh, the First World War, boys, it closed out its fate. The reason for fighting I never got straight, but I learned to accept it with pride, for you don't count the dead when God's on your side. When the Second World War came to an end, we forgave the Germans, and then we were friends, though they murdered
But now we've got weapons of the chemical dust. If fire them we're forced to, then fire them we must. One push of the button and a shock the world wide. And you never ask questions when God's on your side.
What a sad song. God on our side.
Now say that Trump is the chosen one, and so they have to vote for him, even though he stands for the opposite of peace or kindness or care for women, that's for sure. Serial abuser.
Well, let me just qualify us here, Harriet. Welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and I am talking with Dr. Harriet Fraud. Well, now we're going to talk about capitalism. You know, this is our final system, and it's so true. You know, I mean, why are we choosing such ugliness when beauty is so, I mean, it's just amazing to me that we can't start thinking of peace. All we think about is war. But talk about capitalism. What are the pluses and what are the minuses?
Well, capitalism was a plus over feudalism, where people were divided into slaves and serfs. Capitalism, people are divided between employees who create the wealth and employers who appropriate and make the decisions about that wealth. And so that, you know, if you work at Starbucks, you work and you are not hired unless you make more for Starbucks than they pay you. Otherwise, it's a bad employment decision to give you what you're actually worth to them. They take all that extra, their profit, and they decide what to do with it. Their board of directors decides whether they mechanize more and throw you out of your job, whether they create more Starbucks, whether they pay you more, or whatever, or whether they buy new machinery. But you spend your day working there, but you have no say over what happens because you are an employee. And the capitalist system divides people between employers and employees. It's not very democratic, really, but it is very profitable to the people at the top. And countries like Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland, Iceland have limits. They have maximum wages as well as minimum wages and high taxes to make sure people get benefits that we don't have, like free child care, after school care, summer care, paternity and paternity leaves.
You know, like, you bring up an interesting point. You know, people don't think, like you're talking about, you know, needing the employer makes all the rules. In other words, if they want to give the CEO a raise versus having child care,
absolutely,
that's what they do. So the idea is, when you're talking about capitalism and you're talking about socialism, that what you're doing, again, I'm going to say, is you're enhancing, you're giving more fairness to capitalism.
Yes, you are.
If people could just think of it that way, it's not going to take anything away from them. I mean, this is what I'm gleaning out of this conversation. It's going to make it more fair. And that's what happened when the New Deal came in. There was such an imbalance that created the Depression. And then all of a sudden, bringing in these new ideas where there was more sharing, and that's where the 96.6% taxes came in. The capitalists were forced. Otherwise, they were going to lose their position.
That's right.
They weren't going to be able to have. So in a way, socialism, democracy is a very practical idea.
It is. It keeps capitalism from totally falling apart, or it certainly did during the New Deal, because it regulates the capitalism so that you can't have a Jeff Bezos with $150 billion spending $500 million to get himself to the moon while the workers in his warehouse are injured because of the speed up and the low wages. You can't have that because things are regulated. And they had a big campaign, and Reagan is typical, as you pointed out, to make people think that government regulation is the enemy instead of a savior.
a good government is good for the people. A bad government is not good for the people. And that's what we're this conversation, that's what the struggle is. The struggle is to bring the government back into compliance, start looking at regulation so we the people are not suffering. And we are suffering with our children, 1 in 3 cancer, and we have no medical from a lot of people. It's really thought-provoking when you start thinking about it. Well, Dr. Fraud,
I just saw today the statistics from MIT. The top 1% of men live 14 years longer than the bottom 1%, and the top 1% of women live 10 years more. So it's not just quality of life, it's life itself.
Oh, it's amazing. Well, Dr. Fraud, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for this very, very interesting conversation. We're just at the end of the segment. Would you like to give your website any last words or anything that you would like to say?
What I'd like to say is we have to inform ourselves of what is class, what are these things, so we can't be manipulated to make decisions that aren't good for us. And my website is at Harriet. HARRIET FRAAD.com, or you could get it through YouTube. It's called Or Democracy at Work. It's called Capitalism, It's Home, and it's about the intersection of the economy and people's personal lives.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your intelligence, sharing all that you do. And I want to wish you and your family a beautiful, beautiful holiday season, one filled with good health, peace of mind, and lots of loving relationships. Thank you so much.
Same to you and your whole audience, too.
Well, folks, that's it for our show. Special thank you to Dr. Harriet Fraud. She's a hypnotherapist in private practice and also a psychotherapist in New York City. She is the founding member of the feminist movement and the journal Thinking of Marxism for the past 40 years. She has been a radical committed to transforming United States personal and political life. A wonderful, wonderful guest. Wonderful that she able to come onto Women's Spaces as regularly as she does. A reminder, tell your friends Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. this evening. This is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
Because a woman in your life.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, December 2nd, 2019.